We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovics. Joining me today again is John Adams and also Craig Hemke to update us on the silver situation around the world, not just with the Perth Mint, but we have a couple things to talk about. Again, this is kind of a more of a special podcast to just kind of, you know, really get a feel for what's going on. How are you guys today?
Doing well, Tom.
Just dandy, Don. Thank you very much.
Great to have both of you. So, Craig, I'd like to start with you. You wrote back at the beginning of February, you wrote an article entitled Groundhog Day for Silver Investors. And in it, you wrote that the change is likely to materialize out of a physical delivery default. This won't emanate from New York, and it won't likely begin in London either. Instead, look for delivery defaults to begin in the unallocated accounts that are run out of Perth, Montreal, and Zurich. So what brought you to this conclusion?
Years of experience, I guess, Tom. You know, when I first started TF Metals Report back in 2010, all the rage back then, you know, as the precious metals were rolling was, you know, we're going to break the COMEX. You know, the COMEX is a scam and all this stuff. And it is. I'm not trying to say that it's not. But what we found coming out of the financial crisis is that there are some entities that are too big to fail, right? They're too big to even be prosecuted. And so the problem with hanging your hopes on the COMEX is that the major players there are all bullion banks, which are mainly too big to fail banks, right? Mm-hmm. And we found in the past, you know, whether it's the Hunt brothers or even as recently as last March, if the COMEX or the LBMA feels any pressure at all, they'll just change the rules. I mean, last March, they opened a whole brand new contract to deliver fractional ownership of a London bar out of New York. I mean, they'll just do whatever they have to keep their little scheme going. So to think that you're going to break the COMEX, I mean, that's putting your energy into the wrong place, and you're just going to be disappointed. So going back to the silver squeeze weekend, when everybody got together, delivered a bunch of silver off, cleaned all the retailer shelves and all that kind of stuff, that was reflected in a rally on Monday, the 1st of February, where the dealers and the banks and everybody else was trying to hedge, you know, they needed future delivery and stuff like that. And price shot up. Well, guess what? Next day was Groundhog Day. Boom, right back down $3. No, we've never seen that happen before. So that was the title of that post. And what I laid out was, again, this experience that I've gained over the last 10 years, that you think of the system as this massive fractional reserve system where price is determined through the trading of these digital derivative contracts that in many cases have no connection to physical supply demand at all. It's just a function of these banks and moving the price around and trying to take advantage of the speculators and all the rest. And that's why you can get a $25 futures price on CNBC, but a $35 actual physical delivery price. There's two separate things. So I thought, okay, we're back at this again. Everybody's all excited, a whole bunch of new people to this trade after the GameStop experience and all that stuff. And I said, well, I just got to let them know what I've learned. And that is, if you look at that system, you can usually find a weak link. What's the weakest link in the chain? Because the system's hyper-leveraged, where ounces are hypothecated, rehypothecated, and levered, you know, 10, 20, 50, 100 times. We don't even know how many times. And so you got to delever the system. How are you going to do that? Well, you got to somehow find that weak link in the chain to set off some delivery failures. Delivery failures aren't going to come out of New York and London, as I said. However, the weak link are these little private and public mints and the bullion dealers that run their own little fractional reserve little scheme. And those are fine. I mean, they're perfectly legal. The firms drew up these documents, you know, with their lawyers. The people that opened an unallocated or pooled account knew what they were doing. They signed the document. Everything's fine, legal, until it's not. And if you could set off a delivery demand default, then maybe that can trickle up into the whole system. And that was kind of the idea there. And the weakest link are those unallocated accounts. And those are the ones that are located in Perth and around Australia and all through Europe and in Canada and That's where we're finding now today is where the interest is, the excitement is. Mm-hmm.
So Craig, you also listed some forces that are basically complicit in downplaying the possible impact that this could have. So can you tell us what those are?
You mean like media forces or bank forces?
All of the above.
Yeah. Well, it's like any other, the monetary system at this point. You're never going to get the straight story out of CNBC about how corrupt the markets are, right? Because they're dipping their beak in it. That's where their bread is buttered, right? So they're never going to talk about what a fraud the monthly employment numbers are, or what the ridiculous CPI, stuff like that. No one's ever going to talk about that, because then all of a sudden that stresses the banks and the system, and the music stops, and all these people with vested interest aren't going to go that route. And then when you see the same thing in this scheme, this fractional reserve scheme that we use now to price precious metal, all of the big bankers, all of their media agents, whether, you know, it's the Financial Times or the Wall Street Journal or what Bloomberg or whatever, they all think that anybody that actually knows how these markets work, know that they're manipulated, know the history of this going back at least 50 years. They portray us all just as kooks and lunatics. So you can just be written off, you know, shoved to the side. Oh, don't listen to them. They don't know what they're talking about. So that the scheme can continue. Mm-hmm. And so you got to fight that. John knows all about that. Jeez, down there in Australia, he's seen all kinds of garbage in the Australian press, trying to make it like, oh, no, ain't nothing wrong with the Perth Mint. Don't worry about it. Everything fine. When, you know, an actual investigative reporter who's curious and is tasked with getting to the truth, ostensibly to protect the little guy, a curious reporter might actually, you know, try to ask some actual, you know, questions about how this works. But instead, they just gloss it over because, I mean, they're all in this kind of cycle of trying to prop each other up. I don't know if that answers your question or not, Tom, but that's all part of what we're fighting against. Mm-hmm.
I think another example of that could be, as you wrote about in the article too, that JP Morgan had come out right around that time and downgraded the silver miners too. Oh,
yeah. Imagine
Seemed like coincidental timing, right?
And I'll give you one more. I mean, we know how corrupt the American regulator is, the CFTC. I love this. I mean, I don't love this story, but this is the most clear example I can give you. I know back in 2012, because I was kind of secondarily involved in it, we had direct evidence of silver price manipulation within JP Morgan that was written up by lawyers in Washington and submitted to the CFTC in 2012. We thought, okay, here we go. They're in the midst of a silver investigation. They can't deny this. Day goes by, 2 days go by, a week go by, nothing. Finally gets to 2013, and I'm working with Andrew McGuire on this, and he's like, I can't take it anymore. And he was working with Bart Shilton, and Bart Shilton said, why don't you just go on the press and let this out? So we got it. I mean, they're just working to cover it up. So Andy goes on. He went on with Max Kaiser and talked to some people in London, try to start getting the word that CFTC is suppressing this information. The very next day, they closed their silver investigation. After 5 years, said they couldn't find anything. Of course, now the Department of Justice, looking at the same time period, is quoted as saying there's hundreds of thousands of instances of price manipulation and spoofing, but the CFTC couldn't find anything. I'm getting to a point, I promise. The head of the CFTC's investigative unit in Washington, D.C., in 2012, during the time of this investigation, was a guy by the name of David Meister. I used to make fun of him on my side all the time. We called him Mr. Meister. 2 days after this was closed, Mr. Meister quits. Hightails it out of the CFTC. I'm thinking he's so frustrated and angry, he just can't take it anymore. 6 months later, he reappears at a legal firm in Washington called Skadden and Associates, S-K-A-D-D-E-N. Okay, fine. You remember now, a year and a half ago, JP Morgan, a couple of traders, and the head of their precious metals department and trading, a guy by the name of Michael Nowak, get indicted. I'm reading the story about Michael Nowak being indicted for precious metals manipulation. And it says, oh, we think, and there's suddenly there's this quote, oh, we think this is wrong, and certainly Mr. Nowak will be exonerated and blah, 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 said his lead attorney, David Meister. What? So the guy who was in charge of investigating JP Morgan leaves to go to a law firm. And then when JP Morgan finally gets in trouble, he now represents them. So you've got the regulator, the primary regulator, has clearly been compromised. And so anyway, long story, to get back to your original question, Tom, this is how I roll, I guess, sometimes. What was your original question again?
It's all good, Craig. You definitely answered it. So, John, why don't we move to you, and why don't you update us on what you've seen since our last interview 2 weeks ago, and what changes that you've seen out of the Perth Mint? Let's start there.
Sure. What I'll do, Tom, before I just answer that, I mean, I just want to comment on something that Craig said, because I came into like studying these markets in about 2017. And obviously, Craig and a whole bunch of other people have a longer history in these markets than I have. But what I've come to learn is that most silver investors, for example, don't understand how where the price comes from and how the price is set. So it took me a while to understand that. But when I got further into this, what we're talking about here is a international syndicate. So we're not just talking about the CFTC and JP Morgan and Wall Street. We're not talking about the City of London. We're talking about a global network of organizations, invested interests who are working in concert to keep these prices suppressed. And what most Australians don't understand is that syndicate has tentacles in Australia, particularly at the Perth Mint. And what I think Craig was able to forecast accurately when he wrote his article on the 2nd of February was that the Perth Mint's going to run into trouble with these unallocated accounts. Now, So I was with you, Tom, and David Morgan about 2 weeks ago. And just to recap, so about 3 weeks ago, I was hearing all sorts of horror stories about people with what I call synthetic silver, unallocated, pool allocated accounts of the Perth Mint. They were trying to get conversions to physical. The silver squeeze movement definitely had an impact on the thinking of some investors, because they were hearing that there were shortages in the market and they wanted to be sort of first in the queue, and they were running into a range of problems in sort of early to mid-March. So then on the 20th of March, I put out a tweet basically accusing the Perth Mint of default, because their website clearly at that point said, if you have unallocated or pool allocated, 10-day delivery. And if you had allocated, it's 2-day delivery. And to be honest, when I did that, I thought only a few people would see it. And all of a sudden, more than 369,000 people saw that particular tweet. and so then in that subsequent week from the 22nd of March to the 26th, you know, I did a range of interviews on YouTube, including with you and David and a whole bunch of other ones. And we started to get the word out. And then when we go, and then what happened was the last week, so when we talk about the Monday through to Thursday before Good Friday, there was an absolute stampede in Australia. Australians have woken up en masse to these synthetic products. What are they actually? People are now realizing that these are promissory notes, and they have no legal title or property to physical silver, and to a lesser extent, physical gold. People are also waking up to risks around ETFs, especially where JP Morgan is the custodian. And so what I can tell you is, and there's quite a bit to go through here, is we are definitely seeing a revolution in the Australian silver market. I mean, I've got multiple emails, like a lot of people who are Perth Mint clients, who now some of them couldn't stand for delivery or couldn't get metal, and they got cash redemptions and came across to other providers. Some people were able to get physical silver, particularly 1,000-ounce bars for some large positions. And only in the last 24 hours, a new scandal has broken out about the 1,000-ounce bars. But also in terms of private sector organizations in the Australian market who supply unallocated or pool allocated, I have contacts across the industry, and I got told that in the last 2 weeks, there's been an absolute unprecedented stampede from Australian customers moving from unallocated, pool allocated to physical. And the reason why I call this a revolution is because once an investor wakes up to what's going on and moves from a synthetic position to a physical position, they're never going to go back. And what we are witnessing is a structural change and a structural permanent change in the silver market. Now, I think it's happening on a large scale in Australia. But since I did a number of these interviews and I've been doing tweets and writing out newsletters, et cetera, and then obviously Craig's been talking about it, and Chris Marcus and Big Swear and David Morgan, and there's a whole chorus of people now talking about this situation. I'm getting emails from all over the world, from the UK, from Canada, from America, from Argentina, from Germany. There are people who are awake to this message of what is this unallocated, pool allocated products about? What are these ETFs about? How do you ensure that you protect your wealth and get some insurance? So you must own physical. And then obviously people are waking up to, well, if we drain physical out of the market, the retail sector can actually apply pressure at those choke points. And the ultimate choke point is terms of COMEX. So I do agree with Craig that on the hope that some people may think that a big whale is going to come into the market and break COMEX. That historically hasn't happened. But what we can do is starve COMEX of physical silver. And by converting all of these synthetic positions to physical, we can definitely play a big part in that.
Mm-hmm. So I think a good point that's worth highlighting here, John, is really discussing basically that these synthetic positions are in a way a fractional reserve system, right? So run us through what these positions actually mean for those of us, those of our listeners that aren't familiar with them.
Sure. So in the Australian context, if you buy a physical, for example, 1 kilo bar of silver, and either you take physical possession or you store it somewhere, well, that's what they refer to allocated. So that's your physical legal property and you actually have ownership. Now, at the Perth Mint, they have their product called unallocated. And what that effectively means is that they have a working stockpile of raw gold and raw silver, and you can buy a share of that pool. And as the price moves up and down, you can basically get a cash redemption consistent with the price movement. And then the other aspect is if you want to stand for delivery and actually convert your position from unallocated to allocated, that you can. And the previous commitment before Perth Mint changed its legal documentation was 10 days. So that's unallocated. Now, pool allocated in the Perth Mint context is they supposedly have a warehouse full of 1,000-ounce bars. And rather than you legally owning a specific bar, you own a share or you own an interest in this pool of 1,000-ounce bars. And again, you can enjoy the price movement. And if you want a delivery, you are able to get delivery. Now, part of in the first week of this situation in Australia, particularly with pool allocated, there were some customers saying, okay, I want, I have more than 1,000 ounces in pool allocated, give me a 1,000-ounce bar. And they were being denied that access to those bars, even though Richard Hayes, the CEO of the Perth Mint, was saying they were swimming in silver. So initially the narrative of the Perth Mint was, we have 60 tons of 1,000-ounce bars, we're swimming in this stuff. But the problem is that we have a manufacturing problem. And we don't have the capacity to take these 1,000-ounce bars and to melt them down into small product. Well, that position got quickly exposed, kind of like I said, when a whole bunch of large clients with unallocated, pool allocated products, more than 1,000 ounces, says, well, give me a 1,000-ounce bar. And probably in 2 weeks ago when we did the discussion with David Morgan, it was very hit and miss. Some people on some days were able to get bars. Some days that were said there were no bars available, and this was for unallocated or pool allocated clients. Now, it's fair to say that last week I was hearing more customers of being able to get 1,000-ounce bars out of the Perth Mint. So it looks like they have released more bars in the week leading up to Good Friday. So we have seen a change there. Now, critically, I think in the last discussion I had with you, Tom, I talked about a client who bought 20 kilos of silver online with a Perth Mint, was told it was a 4-month wait. And then all of a sudden, when there was this pressure after my initial tweet, he got a phone call and said, well, we have 20 kilos coming in 2 days and actually receive it. So I think that was on the, I think about the 18th of March. I also received an email, which I shared with you and Craig before we started, with a lady who walked into the Perth Mint on the 12th of March, and there was 12 kilos left for retail sale. And she bought all 12, and she was told, she asked point blank, when's the next time can I buy a 1 kilo bar of a Perth Mint product? And they got told 4 months. Well, in the last week, the Perth Mint has released a flood of 1 kilo bars. And it's clear that with the public campaign that I and others have been waging, Perth Mint has changed its production schedule. So I think the theory was they were producing a lot of gold product, and now they've stopped producing gold product, and now they're producing a lot of, in terms of silver product, to sort of trying to quiet down. But you know, when we talk about this international syndicate, it's fascinating in the context of Richard Hayes. I mean, this has been an absolute public relations disaster for the Perth Mint. And I'll probably make a couple of observations. The first one is, anytime he does an interview, he has not inspired confidence among Perth Mint clients. And all of his comments have actually driven more people to dump synthetic products and to buy physical. So when he disparages his own customers by calling them keyboard warriors, that has rubbed a number of his Perth Mint clients the wrong way. The other interesting thing is that the way they have tried to calm the market down through their public relations comments is by doing a number of interviews with the mainstream Australian press. Now, the Australian press typically don't talk in detail about gold and silver. So when Australian investors want to get information about the market, well, where do they go for their information? They actually come to platforms like Palisade Gold Radio or Arcadia Economics or the channel that I run in the interest of the people, or there's a whole host of channels across the world in the alternative media space that talk on a consistent basis about gold and silver. And that's where investors are getting their information from. And as we continue to have this consistent discussion about these problems with unallocated and pool allocated accounts, that's how we're driving the market by these discussions. And yet Richard Hayes has ignored the alternative media. And the reason why he has is because once he comes on a platform like this and he's actually asked some serious questions, he doesn't have any genuine answers. And that's why he's continued to go on Australian platforms. And most of these journalists have no idea about the market. They have no idea what are the right questions to ask. And there have been soft propaganda pieces. So, over the Easter weekend, Sky News here in Australia released a 6-minute, 44-second segment with Richard Hayes and the Perth Mint, and it was just soft propaganda, complete misdirection, and no genuine questions about, well, what is this controversy all about? And I have to say, I was just absolutely stunned on Friday night. So on Good Friday, which is a public holiday, so it was late at night here on the East Coast, and at the time, Perth was 3 hours behind Sydney. I checked the Perth Mint YouTube channel after getting a tip, and the Perth Mint had uploaded a 63-second video about silver production at the Perth Mint on the night of Good Friday. And this video basically did nothing to address the concerns that customers were having about getting their physical silver within the required time frame. And it was just bizarre that on Good Friday they would release this. And now I think I saw it about 2 a.m. Sydney time. And there's a image that someone took a very close, took a close up at. And initially I thought the box said 22nd of September 2020. And obviously that doesn't inspire confidence because, I think they hope to put out a pro silver video showing that in 2021 they have plenty of silver. So initially I looked at the box and go, well, that's 2020. Well, that's an old video that has no relevance to March 2021. And then a number of other people, and I think Craig even jumped on Twitter and said, no, it actually says 2010. So it's like they put out this video and it's like, when did they film it? And what was the purpose of it? And the video actually just drove people and saying, well, I'm losing more confidence in the person by the day. So there has been a series of missteps in how they have tried to communicate their position to the market. And the reality is that as I talk to industry experts about this fractional reserve system, and I think we covered this in the last interview, so I just want to recap. The Perth Mint I was able to expose last year has been engaged in gold leasing with the Reserve Bank of Australia, at least 11 tons. The Reserve Bank of Australia testified to Federal Parliament in February of 2019 and said, when we lease the gold physically does not move. So if we accept that statement from the Reserve Bank of Australia to Parliament, well, why would a refiner slash retailer borrow gold in a foreign vault that does not move? It's effectively an accounting trick to demonstrate that, because their promise to the market is that they have one-to-one backing with these unallocated, pool allocated accounts. Now, my contention is that the backing is not a strict physical backing, it's an accounting backing. And so do they have some physical gold and silver that's available for delivery? I do believe that they do. Do they have all of it? My contention is that they're not. And that's why they're using these gold and silver leases. And I think I said in the last interview with David that if you look at last year's balance sheet, up to $1.7 billion as of 30 June 2020 is what they refer to precious metal borrowings interest bearing. And the interest bearing is effectively the lease cost. So when I've spoken to people in the industry who've been around for a long time, I mean, they pretty much sort of said quietly, and they said, don't quote me, but I think you're right. They are involved in fractional reserve, a fractional reserve synthetic program, but they can't admit it to the market, because obviously Australian customers have actually been led to believe something else. And so they're playing these silly games with in terms of doing these soft propaganda pieces rather than actually addressing the concerns of what clients are clearly what they're experiencing in terms of trying to get the delivery of their gold and silver products from synthetic to physical.
And to your point there, John, if they had the metal to back these accounts, then why would they need to change their website all of a sudden to be subject to availability and production lead times, right?
Yeah, thing is, and you know, the interesting thing is that so I mean, now the legal document, so gold and silver is considered to be a financial product in Australia, and so all financial products have to be backed by what they call a product disclosure statement, PDS. And basically, I think just before Good Friday, they did release. It was actually, I think, the week prior. I think it was either the Thursday or Friday, they changed their legal documentation. They made some very strategic amendments to their website. I was able to pick all of those up, and I'm sure, Tom, you're going to put a few of those images up there. Mm-hmm. And that obviously is the big tell. So in the interview with the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, Richard Hayes tried to reinterpret what this 10-day delivery timeframe meant. And he tried to say this was about quotation and arranging freight costs. And that was completely bogus, because their website said, quote, deliverable in 10 days. So now they've changed their website, they've changed their documentation. And this is very consistent with what Craig was just saying earlier about changing the rules and what SLV did in early February by giving themselves wiggle room. And again, they did this quietly. I was able to pick it up. I broadcast it on social media. I've done a show on my YouTube channel, In the Interest of the People, with my co-host Martin North, and we went through these changes in some detail. But they are telling that there is something wrong at the Perth Mint that they are not willing to come forward and be honest about. And one of the perhaps more concerning elements, so there was a number of changes which they said, effectively, we can't deliver within the 10-day timeframe. So depending on constraints, it may be longer than 10 days. But one of the most fascinating things to my mind is, so with unallocated and pool allocated, they specifically put something on their website and said, you cannot stand for delivery immediately. You must go to allocated first. And once you get to allocated, then you can go to, then you can actually ask for the middle. Now, over the last 2.5 weeks, a range of customers wanted to go from either unallocated to or unallocated or pool allocated to allocated, and they were denied that choice. And then when they get to allocated, you know, there has been some issues there. So perhaps the most fascinating aspect for me is this pool allocated product, because if there is a warehouse full of 1,000-ounce bars, which according to the Perth Mint is a one-to-one backing with their pool allocated sort of pool of funds, why would you need to go to allocated and then they actually get the medal? You know, if you've got, for example, 10,000 ounces of silver in pool allocated, well, there should be 10 bars in the pool. Just go get the 10,000 ounce bars and deliver them to me, and we should all be good. Now, I have to say that there are private sector providers in Australia with pool allocated who actually do have adequate silver supply at the moment, and they are allowing their customers to go from pool allocated to immediate delivery without any intermediate step to allocated. So the fact that the Perth Mint is saying you can't stand for direct delivery of a 1,000-ounce bar in the pool allocated product, I mean, that is, again, a big tell, which I think Richard Hayes needs to explain. Well, why can't you, if you've got, 1,000 ounces, why can't you just take a bar out of the pool and sort of walk off with it and be happy?
Mm-hmm. I think another example of something that doesn't build confidence in this situation as well, John, is something that was brought to light that they were delivering Chinese bars. So tell us about how that situation developed and kind of who brought that to light.
Sure. So 24 hours ago, I got a message from someone who I've been tracking, and he had 17,000 ounces of unallocated silver. And he had the and he said he wanted delivery. And so we're doing this recording now on Wednesday after Easter. And here I am Wednesday in Australia. So on Tuesday morning, Australian time, this particular investor called up the Perth Mint, said, I have 17,000 ounces. I want to go to allocated. Give me 1,000-ounce bars. I'll give me 17 of them and I'll be happy. And what he was told was, we have 2,000-ounce Perth Mint bars, and but then we have 15 1,000-ounce bars which are refined, that have been refined and manufactured in China, which are in the possession of the Perth Mint. Now, and this particular investor decided to take those bars. Now, a couple of points there. The first is that this refiner is actually LBMA accredited, and that I think they got the accreditation in 2020. And you know, some people have raised some suspicions as to why did a whole bunch of refiners in Russia, China, and Turkey get accreditation in 2020 when there was a pressure in the physical market about 12 months ago. But I have inquired about these particular bars and in terms of these products. Now, so far, what I've been told is that even though they are manufactured in or refined in China by an LBMA accredited facility, the bars are fine. There have been no evidence of that there's anything wrong with the bars. But the key issue is that the Perth Mint has not communicated this to the market. And a lot of people have been caught by surprise. So so I put out a tweet yesterday, about 24 hours ago, signaling that effectively the Perth Mint is out of its own product. And that is quite telling in and of itself, because they're supposed to be swimming in 60 tons of this stuff, and yet they don't have enough of their own brand. And some of this 60 tons is actually a foreign product that they've had to import. But when I put it out, a number of people who saw the tweet immediately thought to themselves, well, in the last 2.5 weeks, I've gone from either unallocated or pool allocated to allocated, and the Perth Mint has sold me a range of 1,000-ounce bars, and I've had to pay the fabrication costs. Now, one person from Victoria calls me up, yes, last night, and says to me he bought, he went from unallocated to allocated and got 6 1,000-ounce bars. He paid the fabrication costs, which is $1,000 per bar. I should say that November last year, the Perth Mint had dramatically increased their fabrication costs for both gold and silver. And again, clients were not informed of this. They just put the documentation out there, and there's been no justification for it. So I'm wondering if, you know, Craig may have a view as to whether raising fabrication costs is the equivalent of raising margin requirements in terms of the COMEX or not. But in any case, I mean, so this person
just before we move on there, John, to your point there, they raised the fabrication cost on a 1 kilo bar of gold by 400% and 1,000 ounce bar of silver by 500%. Like it Correct. Wasn't just a minor adjustment.
Yeah, pretty, yeah, true. We're talking about very large increases in the fabrication costs. And again, I don't think they've justified those particular increases. So, you know, it's not like they've actually invested a new plant and equipment, or they've taken on more staff to actually handle the volume. So, you know, they just increased it by those sort of percentages. And they actually haven't justified to the market, well, why those increases are so large. But so this person saw my tweet. Actually, his wife saw my tweet. And then told this person who I spoke to and said, John Adams has just said that the Perth Mint is selling Chinese bars. And so this person called up and said, well, I've paid $6,000 in fabrication costs for 6 1,000-ounce bars. What's the brand of the bar that you're going to send to me? And they said, they're Chinese bars. And he basically, you know, he said, if you send them to Victoria, I'm literally going to drive across the country and give them back to you, because I'm doing business with the Perth Mint because I want Perth Mint product. There are definitely a lot of Australian investors who, Perth Mint is not the cheapest in the market, and they do, charge at a rate slightly higher than some of the other providers in the market. But Australians are willing to pay that extra cost because it's the Perth Mint, because the Perth Mint is internationally known for having a certain quality and a certain standard and a certain reputation for the gold and silver that they produce and sell to the market. So that's why if people are paying these exorbitant fabrication costs, that's what they're paying for. They're paying for Perth Mint quality. And all of a sudden, this person called up and said, well, what am I getting? Well, you're not getting our product. We're getting you, it is LBMA accredited, but it's actually a foreign bar from China. And he basically threatened legal action. And so in order to calm him down, he got promised that he would get Perth Mint bars. So he would, you know, they would find some 1,000-ounce bars from another client. They would give it to him and they would just swap them around. But obviously now that this is out there, dare I say, there's going to be a flood of people calling the Perth Mint this morning and actually asking them, well, I've paid these fabrication costs. What am I getting? I spoke to one of my friends who actually, again, he went from unallocated to pool allocated, and he paid fabrication costs for 6 1,000-ounce bars. And I called him last night and I said, well, what brand did you get? And he goes, I don't know. They never told me and I never asked. I just always assume it's going to be Perth Mint. So he's actually going to be calling this morning. And I said, well, if they've actually given you Chinese bars, what are you going to do? He goes, I won't accept them. I mean, I'm paying $1,000 fabrication cost per bar because I want a Perth Mint bar. So complete lack of transparency and honesty from Richard Hayes to the market. No matter what the Perth Mint does, they are digging a deeper and they're digging a deeper and deeper hole for themselves. It's driving down confidence, and obviously this has now become a sensation on YouTube as well as social media, and investors around the world are now picking up on this. And I got a message this morning from someone in the United States who has a synthetic position with Kitco. And because of the commentary and the videos that we've been doing about this, he converted from unallocated to allocated at Kitco, and he struggled to get his order. But then he was told if he wanted to convert anything more than what he got, he would have to pay. He would have to wait more than a year. So now I haven't confirmed what he was told, but a year to wait for physical silver from Kitco, that is clearly signaling something's dramatically wrong, not just at the Perth Mint, but with these synthetic products right around the world.
Absolutely, John. And I think that kind of speaks to what Craig was saying earlier is, you know, what happens when these, let's say, people that are in charge decide to change the rules, Craig. I know that the example of these Chinese, Russian, and these other refiners being added after basically COVID hit, that's an example of the LBMA changing the rules when it suited them, right?
Sure. Yeah. I'm just sitting here fascinated, shaking my head, listening to all these examples of John that John just gave us. Again, it gets back. It's a confidence thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's actually what con game is short for. It's a confidence game. And this thing about the 400 to 500% increase in the fabrication cost. I don't know. I think actually we all refer to our old friend William of Ockham on this deal, right? And his razor, which looks like, Tom, maybe you could use. Anyway, I mean, let's cut to the chase. I mean, it's not like the Perth Mint said, here's an idea where we're going to make some money. We're going to really screw everybody on our fabrication costs. It's clearly a disincentive, mm-hmm. right? We're going to make the fabrication costs so expensive that very few people will do this. And we won't get called to the carpet on it. I mean, that's pretty obvious to me what's going on here. And look, I just wrote about this again today. It just got published. I write a thing every week for Sprott Money, which is a bullion dealer out of Canada. And I wrote, that's where that article from February 2nd was from. And I wrote a kind of a follow-up thing today. And I want to make clear, okay, nobody's alleging that there's some kind of scam or something illegal is taking place or it's some kind of fraud or something like that. Well, you know, if push comes to shove and something is uncovered, fine, but that's not what we're alleging. The point here is that there are people out there who own these products, these unallocated accounts, these pooled accounts, and they think they own physical metal for some, you know, rainy day, or they want to eliminate counterparty risk, right? That's probably why most people own physical metal. I don't want to own, you know, I've got enough counterparty risk and some stocks I own and bonds and debt and my mortgage and everything else. I want something, I just know what it is. So I've got my physical metal in my safe, you know, or in a storage company or something like that. There's a lot of people that think that's what they have with their unallocated or pooled. There's a lot of people who think that's what they have with their ETF. Well, I got silver. I own the SLV. No. The only people that have silver in the SLV are the banks. Okay, read the prospectus. They're listed as authorized participants. They're the ones that can actually add or take silver or gold out of the SOB and the GLD. You and I can't. And even though, God bless them, the people at Sprott with the PSLV, which is far preferable because actually we know they take physical delivery when they add to the size of the fund. Okay, we're deleveraging the system by getting metal out of the hands of the banks. We know they do that. But even that, you got to have what, like 10,000 shares if you're going to get any out. So there's people that think, okay, I want to own some physical metal. Or maybe there's a broker that gets paid, you know, they don't get paid selling physical metal, but maybe they get a commission by working with one of these mints or one of these dealers. And so they put their client in this unallocated thing. And the client thinks, the person thinks, they've got metal. No, you don't. Okay. Oh, at normal times, when everybody's confident that it's okay, yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, a year ago, 2 years ago, you could show up with a Perth Mint. Kitco, you know, Zurich, you know, any of these banks, you know, UBS, Deutsche Bank, whatever. And you could ask for your physical metal and they say, oh yeah, no problem. Okay. And, but now that's not the case because so many people are asking at once and it stresses that fractional reserve system. If I might, I mean, just give, this is probably the best, this example I give my wife to try to explain how this has been bubbling over for the past month. If I have $100,000 in cash, right, I could store it myself, basically insure it, you know, by maybe I'm worried my house is going to burn down, my cash is going to burn up. So I tell my insurance agent, you know, I got to add a rider on my homeowner's insurance. So I got to insure it. I got to store it myself. There's risk involved. Somebody breaks in my house, all that kind of stuff. And I say, Dad, screw it. I don't want to do this. I'm going to put this money in the bank. Is cash. Let the bank hold it. Okay. Well, everybody knows banks run a fractional reserve system. They take my $100,000 and they loan out $90,000 of it. and they don't just simply stick it in the vault. Okay. So if I now decide I want to get my $100,000 out and I go to the bank, well, first of all, they're not going to have it in the vault. If I'm the first person to show up that day wanting cash, they'll give me, you know, maybe $10,000 out and I'll sign some paperwork and they'll cut me a check in a day or two and I'll get my $100,000. Everything's fine. Problem is, and where you get a bank run, is when people start to have losing confidence that their cash is actually in the bank. They know it's the bank only has certain liquidity, amount of liquidity. And so other people start to show up at the bank demanding some of their cash back. And they start giving something and all of a sudden the bank gives away all their liquidity. And now the metal is tied up, or the metal, the cash is tied up in all these other loans around town, just like the metal is tied up in all these other allocated leases and promissory notes and all this other jazz. So it works until it doesn't. And that's the risk of people here that think they bought physical metal and instead all they have is exposure to price. Now, of course, the Perth Mint will say, well, we've got the backing of the government of Western Australia, and if we have to sell you out in cash, they'll print the cash and you'll be made whole. Yeah, you'll maybe be made whole at maybe yesterday's closing price. But now you got dollars, you got Aussie dollars, you got to take those and buy metal. And what if it's a whole blow up where you can't buy physical metal for anything less than double what you just got paid in cash? But you don't have the metal, is the thing. So if you're cool with that, right? It's like, look, I don't want to, you know, I'm fine with all this. I like my SLV. I like just having exposure to price. That's all I want. I don't want anything. You're the perfect customer for these people, right? However, if you bought and signed up for an unallocated account thinking, well, I can get it anytime. You know, the rep told me, the broker told me I can always get it and all that kind of stuff. We are at that moment in time where that confidence is failing. And what you don't want to be is the guy or gal in line behind the last person that gets some metal out of there. You know what, John, you mentioned how many, what did they say for how many 1,000-ounce bars they had in Perth these days or in Kitco? I mean, didn't you say something about Kitco having, they told this person they had like 330 100-ounce bars or something like that?
No, I think, look, I mean, I think maybe you got that from someone else.
Okay, well, somebody had tweeted something about a limited, well, whatever, their limited supply that they had, or what did Perth have? What did Perth say they had? They had 60 1,000-ounce bars or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. So Richard Hayes came out and said that he's got 60 tons of silver ready for sale.
Okay, right. And we know that wasn't true because your client was told they wouldn't sell it to him. Well, what if they say, okay, all right, there's this run developing, and they start parsing it out and giving it away, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and this fractional reserve system. What you don't want to be is a person in line behind the last person to get some, right? You don't want to be the person in line at the bank who, you know, they get the cash out of the bank before they slam the shutter shut and lock the doors and the regulators come in. So I guess my point in being here tonight is, yeah, I have a vested interest. I want to see the whole system explode and implode, and I want to get back to some type of fair pricing for metal investors and for mining companies and mining company employees and the guy that works for $5 a day in a mine in Peru. Okay, I want to get the bankers out of it because I think they're mostly criminals. And this is the way to do it. You got to start deleveraging the system and destroying their confidence game. So I have a vested interest. I'm not trying to say I don't. But the reason I'm here is I'm thinking about everybody in the world that has in Canada and the US and Australia or whatever that's got one of these unallocated accounts and think they own physical metal, and they don't. They don't. It works until it doesn't. And you don't want to be the one searching for a chair when the music stops. That's the point.
So, Craig, as you were mentioning, Kitco seems to be running into some issues too. Can you highlight some of the other, let's say, questionable positions they've had themselves in the past that really shouldn't present confidence in their systems as well?
Well, anybody can just Google this yourself. Or maybe DuckDuckGo it yourself, whatever that, you know, whatever your favorite more secure browser is. They had all sorts of tax fraud issues a couple of years ago that we thought were going to put them out of business. And I think one of the Kitners went to jail. Maybe I'm talking out of my rear end. I don't remember all the sordid details. But right there, I thought, well, this doesn't seem to be a real trustworthy place. And I've always struggled with their management, from John Nadler to Peter Hug, you know, who characterize anybody that even questions the sanctity of the pricing scheme as some kind of loon conspiracy theorist nut job. You know, anyway, I don't have to go down the road to talk about JP Morgan and going all the way back to the London Gold Pool to understand the banker element in controlling the precious metals price. Mm-hmm. But they are clearly another, just like Richard Hayes, another spoke in the wheel, you know, a cog in the machine promoting this fractional reserve system. And again, it's the ultimately the benefit of it is after the London Gold Pool collapse in 1968, you couldn't price precious metal off the true one-to-one exchange of metal, ounce of metal for cash anymore, because there just wasn't enough of it for the way the system was, you know, the monetary system was growing, you know, and the wars and the welfare programs and everything else, guns and butter, right? So Nixon closes the gold window, and there, what happens, you get all the synthetic, make-believe precious metal alternatives that are developed so that it's not, I mean, I got my metal. And I know where to, I got some in this desk drawer right behind me, right here. I'll pull one out for you. I don't even have to look. I'll just pull one out. Here's 2 ounces from Scott Steel Silver right there. So if you want to break into my office, you can get it. It's right up here in the upper left. Okay. I know what that is. That's the actual real deal. But what most people don't know is how many individual ounces are levered 20 times, 40 times, 50 times within the scheme. That's why it's impossible to know what the actual price is. You know, Tom, I don't know if you've asked me this yet. We've only, you and I have only talked a couple of times, but invariably I get asked, well, what's the proper price in a fair market for gold and silver? You know, and everybody's got these stories, you know, about, well, if you base it off the M2 money supply and blah, blah. Everybody's got some pie in the sky number. I have no freaking idea. And that's always been my answer, because the number is a fraction, right? It's dollars per ounce. Well, the numerator is ounce, and we have no idea how many ounces there are, particularly in gold, right? Because the supply of it only goes up maybe 1% a year, and every ounce is leased and hypothecated and levered and all this kind of stuff. You don't have any idea how much gold with free title there is in the world. None. We have no idea. You can tell me how much there is. Maybe I can tell you what the price is. I know it's not $1,745. That's for sure. So anyway, moral of the story is this is all part of the scheme and the scam. And it's again, though, it's not illegal. And these banks in Zurich that do this, or, you know, Montreal or Scotiabank used to run this kind of thing, and now they've kind of gotten out of the business, and Perth and other companies in Australia, and they're not out there trying to put themselves out of business. They're trying to make money. Just like your local bank, and your local bank makes money by taking in deposits and then loaning it out, making that spread. And so that's what these places do with your metal. And it works in the fractional scheme as long as I feel comfortable that I can show up at my bank and they'll give me all my cash back. And the fractional reserve bullion scheme works as long as I feel comfortable I can show up in Perth or in Montreal or whatever, they'll give me my metal. But when all of a sudden they don't, then it becomes a problem. And when it's only one person standing in that line, ain't no big deal. You double that to 2 people standing in that line, well, okay. You double it again to 4 and to 8 and to 16 and 32 and 64 and 128. All of a sudden, the metal's gone that they had on hand. And like I said, that's when the blinds come down and the locks get slammed and the regulators show up. You know, that's when there's a real problem. And you just don't want to be holding the bag at that point. And this may all blow over. Maybe it won't be no big deal by 2 weeks from now. And we'll all go back, you know, to talk about something else. But this is brewing. This is really getting some momentum. And again, I just come back to that. You don't want to be the last person in line. So if you're not comfortable, if you're comfortable just having price exposure, fine. But if you're not comfortable, you better call these folks and find out what the terms are to get metal out of there before there's no metal to be had.
Excellent, Craig. Those are all just very, very important points. John, do you have anything to add that's on your mind as we wrap up here?
Sure. You know what? So a couple of points. The first one is when Craig said we may go back, my contention is we're not going back. I mean, we're seeing, like I said at the very beginning of the interview, a permanent structural change in the market. particularly in Australia, because Australians went into these synthetic products and didn't fully understand what they were. So in the last two or three, 4 years, we've had a lot of new entrants into the market, and they wanted to save money on fees and spreads, et cetera, and storage costs. And that's why they put their money into these products. Let me give an example. Last Wednesday, I was in Adelaide and I spoke to someone who's come followed my work and come to some of my seminars in the past. And he said he's got $1 million in precious metals. I said, well, what do you got? He goes, the bulk of it is an unallocated gold and silver at Perth Mint, and he has some ETFs. And I told him point blank, you own nothing. You own promissory notes and you own a unit in a trust. So if you actually want metal, you've got to change $1 million and actually go get the physical. So we are seeing a permanent sea change in Australia at least, and the word has gone global. The other thing is when Craig's talked about confidence, now one of the big things we haven't even touched on in this discussion is rationing. 2 weeks ago, when the Perth Mint said that they were struggling to produce 1 kilo silver bars in particular, they took off their entire bar product list off their, or the catalog off their website. So when you went to the Perth Mint website and you looked at the silver bars that you could potentially buy, it was bare. It was just an empty page. And that was just shocking in terms of confidence, because for the CEO to say we're swimming in silver, and then you go to their webpage and there's nothing on there, that did not inspire confidence among the Australian market. Last week, when they did have something to sell in terms of bars, what did they do? They introduced rationing. And this rationing was which happened for the first time in the history of the Perth Mint. So even I think Chris Marcus on Acadia Economics called the Perth Mint up and said, well, I noticed that, for example, 1 kilo bars, there's a limit to what you can buy, and it's 10 kilos per household. Well, when did this start? A week and a half ago. And what happened a week and a half ago? I tweeted out that they're in default. And now they're introducing rationing. And, you know, given that I studied economics, I mean, from an economic theoretical point of view, when you see rationing, it tells you something's wrong with the price. I think Chris Marcus asked the staff, well, what's the reason for the rationing? Oh, because we want to ensure that everyone gets a fair share of metal. The thing is, in a free market, well, how do you ensure efficient allocation? You let the price go higher, and they're not doing that. So the fact that they introduced rationing last week, that again is just gobsmacking in terms of confidence. Earlier this morning. So I was up at 1 a.m. and I had a phone call from someone in Perth, and it was 11 p.m. there, so we're in the middle of the night. In the last 2 weeks, he went to inspect his allocated product, gold and silver. And, you know, he went in there and he went to do an audit with his wife, and everything was fine. But then he started getting chatting with one of the Perth Mint employees. And she point blank said, of course the silver market is manipulated. And he was shocked because Richard Hayes, the official position of the Perth Mint and a whole bunch of other LBMA and COMEX accredited bullion dealerships across the world, there is no manipulation. It's a conspiracy theory. And yet you've got renegades now inside the Perth Mint telling their clients, we know it's rigged, but that is the nature of the market. So I'm just getting a flood of Australians and people around the world by the hour sending me new information, tidbits about things they're picking up. And, all of this is just snowballing. And, a few days ago, I joined Wall Street Silver, and they repost my tweets, and we're getting the word out there. But, no, look, I think we've seen a new revolution in the silver market, and it's not going back. And I think as we've awakened this retail giant, we are going to just see gain more and more momentum over the next few weeks. And it's just going to exacerbate the shortages that we're already seeing right across the supply chain.
So the question then becomes, then, if this system is rigged, why invest in it?
So the reason why now, without sort of wanting to be too self-promotional, I did a video on my YouTube channel in the interest of the people, and it's called George Soros and the Silver Moonshot. Anytime you find in the history of financial markets, you will find examples of where governments or banks or central banks will fix a price, whether it's a price ceiling or a price floor. When those floors and ceilings break, what you see is you see a rush towards equilibrium. And as just Craig said, we don't know what equilibrium in the silver market or the gold market really is, but we know that it's going to be a dramatic move. And if you are positioned correctly, you make a lot of money. And that's what George Soros did in 1992 when he broke the Bank of England. The Bank of England introduced a price floor for the pound versus the Deutsche Mark above equilibrium. And they were called the exchange rate mechanism. George Soros knew that it wasn't going to hold. And he placed a three-stage bet to the tune of $1 billion on the assumption that the value of the pound would fall below the price ceiling and he'd make a lot of money. Well, one morning on the morning of Black Wednesday, he increased his position from $1 billion to $10 billion. The rumor got out into the market. Everyone started to flood and the pound crashed. Now, the Bank of England tried to save the pound by raising interest rates 5% in a day, but it wasn't enough to stop the stampede. And Soros made $1 billion profit in 4 weeks. So when people think, how did he get all his money to finance some of his political activities in the United States? He took advantage of a price floor that he was able to break. And obviously, I think, particularly in terms of my interest in the silver market, I do think that this price, so the way I view the silver market is we have a price ceiling below equilibrium. If enough market pressure is applied, we can break that ceiling in one form or another. And I think, if you look at the chart, the ceiling you could say is about $30 US. And then once you break the ceiling, if you are positioned correctly, you're going to make what I call an asymmetric return. So it's low risk, high and high reward, but you need a lot of people to come into the market with a lot of dollars to basically crack that ceiling. And what I'll say is there's a lot of investors looking at the price. Do not look at the price chart. The way to analyze these markets is to look at the flow of physical silver and gold, and where's the silver and gold moving to in what form and in what quantity. And what we know is silver is being drained out of the COMEX, and now we're into April in a non-delivery month, but it's still going to be a reasonably large amount of silver being called for. And then we're going to have fun and games in May, and I've heard estimates of between 65 million to 100 million ounces could be called on in May, and that I think is going to have significant problems for COMEX to come up with that sort of metal when you add in all the existing pressure, and now we're seeing this movement in the retail market from synthetic to physical. Again, now, if they survive May, and I'm not sure that they will, the question is, can they survive July when the next month comes up? So I think the market's moving in the right direction. I think more pressure is being applied in the physical market, and we're starting to see Perth Mint give way, just like how Craig forecasted on the 2nd of February. And dare I say, we're going to see more breaks, more chinks in the armor as we go forward, whether it's in Montreal or Zurich or other places around the world.
Excellent, John. Craig, anything to add there on any of your thoughts towards why would you invest in silver if it's so manipulated?
Yeah, just a couple of things. One, no system built on a foundation of lies is going to persist forever. And no monetary system on top of that persists forever. The pendulum is always swinging and the reserve currency is changing. We think it's never going to change because of the fact that it hasn't changed in our lifetime. This changes every once every century. And it always, once you lose faith and confidence in your currency system, the pendulum always swings back the other way to back with some type of hard asset. So I continue to buy physical precious metal, not for profit. But I know it's outside of the system, outside of the monetary system. They manipulate it, whatever. But I buy it for that first and foremost. But then, there is this huge potential gain because we know that the system isn't priced off of physical supply demand. It's priced off the supply demand of all the synthetic stuff. The other part of this that I would just wrap up with is more fundamental, I guess. And that's price and production when we get to silver. Silver, like gold in the West, gets demanded more. There's more interest in it as the price goes up. It's funny how we look at things as investors in the West, you know, we want more and more of Tesla because the price keeps going up more and more, you know, it were, if you were to, you would never do that, you know, with like bread, you know, or milk or a jacket. You'd be like, well, I'm going to wait till that's on sale. I'm going to wait for the price to come down. But that's not how we work with investments. We always want more when the price is going up, and the price will go up on its own fundamentals of negative real interest rates, you know, this exploding debt, central banks around the world having to cap nominal yields, negative nominal yields across Europe, making gold look more attractive, even though, it, you know, since it doesn't pay a dividend, all this kind of stuff. And as price goes up, there's going to be more demand. You know, John mentioned rationing. I want to do one last thought on that. They're rationing because they don't have it. I mean, that's what you do. You got to. You got a vault with $100,000 in it, and that's what you got that day, and people are showing up. You get toward the end with only $10,000 left, you're going to start saying, well, we'll give you $5,000, and we'll give you $3,000. You know, you're rationing it at the end, you know, trying to make it last. And finally, to production, and this gets to where John said, what John's point was about, we may not be going back. Because silver, you know, they try to make it sound like it's some huge market. It's not. We mine, let's just say 850 million ounces a year globally. That's counting China, okay, which they don't export a lot of silver unless they apparently export it to the first mint. But anyway, I digress. Anyway, 850 million ounces. You get silverware, you know, stuff that comes up, you know, that gets turned back in and re-refined. Maybe that's 150 million. Let's call it a billion ounces of silver every year. Okay. And the world lives off the flow of this. There are no massive stockpiles that we're drawing down. In fact, some people say that we've actually been running a deficit for several years now. It's pretty consistent. 550 million, maybe 600 million ounces a year gets chewed up and consumed industrially, you know, solar panels, electronics, and the rest. So that leaves 300 to 400 million ounces for investment demand. Well, man, what did we blow through in January already, right? In India, they've been substituting to buy more silver when gold prices go up. So there's really a finite amount of global silver that can replenish these stocks that are being depleted and fulfill the investment demand. And that's why John may be right. We may not be going back because there's just simply more physical investment demand than there is the actual product itself. And they can do all their phony baloney games and all this other stuff with fractional reserve and unallocated accounts and futures accounts and ETFs and all this stuff. At the end of the day, actual investment demand chews up all what's left. And when investment demand goes to 500 million ounces, then you've got a supply deficit. So how are you ever going to replenish the stocks? And that's our opportunity. That's our opportunity to really squeeze, actually that short squeeze that we're talking about, squeeze the banks, make them cover all their shorts, establish a more fair and free and equitable pricing scheme, and then we'll let the chips fall where they may and we'll see what the price is.
Excellent point, Craig. John, why don't you, as we're wrapping up here, why don't you let our audience know where they can learn more about you and your writing?
Sure. Yeah. So my website is adamseconomics.com. So I do write a couple of articles a month. And people want an hour by hour blow about what's going on in the Australian market. Best place is to probably follow me on Twitter, Adams Economics. That's my handle. I do have a Telegram group if anyone's on Telegram, Adams Economics as well. And anytime I get a tidbit of information that I can verify or that I'm confident with, I will post it and people can get a tick by tick, a TikTok about what's really going on.
Excellent. And Craig, of course, you're always available at the TFMR Metals Report.
Yep. I started that in 2010, which is like, it's only 11 years ago, but in gold and silver, that's like 40 years ago. But it's still thriving. Great online community. I do analysis every morning. I write a post every morning talking about what's going on that day, updating the price charts, telling you where I think price is headed. Do a podcast every afternoon. If you want to kind of wade in, you know, kind of kick the tires a little bit, I'm on Twitter as well at TF Metals. I take little snippets of my podcast every day and make a little 10 or 12 minute video for YouTube every Saturday. And you can follow that. You can subscribe to YouTube. You can also go to Spotify and Apple and iTunes and all that stuff and listen to an audio version. But if you want to just dive in the big pool, man, it's only $15 a month. It's not like it's some investment newsletter that's like $100 a month. It's just 15. So it's 50 cents a day. And I think maybe not even so much of what I provide, the information the community provides, you're going to learn a lot and you're going to feel like you're getting pretty good value. So again, just tfmetalsreport.com.
And of course, we'll have all those available in the show notes and your articles and everything we've talked about in the show notes as well. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you, Tom.
Keep up the good fight, John. Thank you, Tom.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.